And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 679. We're going to recap your week 17 fab and talk about some first half all-stars post ADP 200 and OCs this year, and probably go down some rabbit holes like Shohei Ohtani's already gone deep. And then, you know, Logan Webb comes in the third inning for the National League and blows the lead. So it's 3-3 now. So leave it to the Giants to make things fun for the National League, because not like we'll need home field anyways. So have some fun with that. But before we get to that, you can find me on Twitter at BDintric and my guest as most weeks for the Fab Recap on Twitter at BreakingBen_T Bented. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, Bob, I'm doing well. On location right now, as we were just talking about. You identified the storm pretty well. It was like that Chicago hurricane thing, I think, came through New York today and hit me pretty good. Lost power, but was able to find a family friend that had power, and I'm ready to go.
Yeah, Ben is dedicated. I had some work things on Monday that kind of prevented me from recording, so we moved it to Tuesday. His power goes out about 2 hours ago or so. He's like, don't worry about it. He's going to a friend's house, and he's going to make it happen. So I appreciate it. I think the listeners will appreciate it, too, because we'll get to continue. We actually had a fun week 17 of Fab to recap. There's actually some fun young names to discuss on that one, and some interesting prices as usual. But I think this All-Stars thing will be kind of fun, because I was telling you off the air, it's kind of standard for most content places to do a first half fantasy All-Stars. But we put the wrinkle on it post 200 ADP, and we'll get to that in just a second. But before we get to that, like usual, remind everybody what you have going on and where they can find you.
Yeah, I'm writing on Sports Ethos. We just came out with a kind of in line with what we're doing tonight, All-Stars article. I only was able to jot down some names, I think.
I think you went muted, my friend. Ben's on location. We're having some fun with internet, folks. So we'll keep going with that. But he writes over at Sports Ethos, does a weekly streaming starting pitching column for some usually deeper league starting pitching sources. So that's pretty fun. And he was going to tell you, there's Ben. Are you back?
Yes, I wasn't sure if what happened there. Sorry about that.
No, you're all good. It's internet. It's totally understandable. So I was telling everybody, you write a deep dive, like a deeper leagues pitching streaming article each week over there.
Yes.
And then you're going to mention something else you guys were doing.
Yes, we just, it's coming out in pieces. They asked everyone at Sports Ethos, all the contributors, to fill out a Google Doc with our all-stars, our duds, prospects, and things like that. So that's coming out in pieces. I think two parts have come out already. And I'll retweet that out whenever they get released. But yeah, fun stuff there.
Yep, always good stuff there. Fun people over there at Sports Ethos. So everybody go check all that stuff out. But let's have some fun here. Like I said, we're going to do first half All-Stars post ADP 200. We're going to stick with OCs because that's kind of what we do for Fab. Keep a 12-team format dependent, obviously. These ADPs may fluctuate depending on league format, league site, so on and so forth. And then I did ADPs from March 15th till draft day, essentially. So we have over 100 drafts. So definitely there's a lot of options to be said. But each position was different. And I think this is also a fun exercise, because with Ryan on Bubba and the Bloom, we've been looking at like first half performances versus ADP. And there's some positions it's very obvious you needed to be top heavy, and then it got ugly towards the bottom, and so on and so forth. So it's a fun exercise to dig in some more here. So we'll go position by position. We each picked a player and then maybe some honorable mentions or whatnot, but we're not going to get to all the players because we only picked one each. So don't get mad and enter the comment world and say, what about this guy? There probably were more, but not at every position. It was rough at some. So Ben, why don't you start out at the catcher's position and tell us who you picked for your catching all-star?
Yeah, I was between who you picked and I picked. I figured, well, I actually own Ryan Jeffers on a couple teams, so I'll pick him. He's it's kind of hard for catcher. There wasn't too many performers that have really outdone their draft costs. I thought it's as you and Brian covered on your review, a lot of the early catchers are really at the top of the player rate right now for the first half of the season. So finding someone post pick 200 is kind of tricky, but even with Jeffers struggling lately, I think he has done enough so far, at least in a roto league. If you're doing a head-to-head format, you may have dropped him already. And as happened in my 12-team head-to-head league, I recall him being on the waiver wire. But if you're playing roto, the stats are still there. The average is a little low, but you kind of expect that with Jeffers. It's the power that you want, and hopefully he can stop platooning with Christian Vasquez and get hot again and be what he was early in April and to some degree in the other months too, but April was really the month that kind of gave us those high hopes for a big breakout year, and it's kind of slowed down. But if he can just duplicate to some extent what he did already in the first half, he could have a really, really good breakout year.
Yeah, Jeffers is on the prowl to have a monster season, but he was also hitting every day. He's either catching or playing DH, and that was promising. And like you mentioned, now he's pretty much just platooning with Vasquez, because for now the Twins have been healthy enough to have other people DH, which is taken away from Jeffers at bats. If we can get Jeffers back to playing or hitting, let's say 5 or 6 days a week, that would be awesome. And I think his production would be better, because there's certain players that just need regular at bats. I could be wrong, just could be overstating it, because I am a Jeffers fan as well. And the kind of hot start was great. The coldness has not been great, but I'm with you. I think there is some potential there, and hopefully he gets a good second half ahead of him, because he's already probably outproduced compared to what many thought he would this season. So a second half would be pretty promising as well. For me, it's Shea Bangalaers, and I have like mixed emotions about Shea Bangalaers, because I hate drafting catchers that don't hit for good average. He's hitting .213 this year. It's actually better than last year, so he's got that going for him. But you're getting more of what you expected, some power and whatnot, but 17 home runs in the first half is already outstanding. He had 22 all of last season. He has 50 RBIs already. He had 63 all of last year, and he's thrown in 4 stolen bases. It's already one more than last season's total. So he's hitting for a ton of power, stealing bags. I've always said he's the poor man's Cal Raleigh. Well, Raleigh's got like 20, 21 home runs this year. Raleigh's hitting like more like .230-ish, so he's hitting better. But very similar skill set, it feels like, between the two. And with Langoliers, he's playing every day because it's the A's, which is a plus. So if you can afford the batting average situation, or if it's so late in the season, your batting average is already shot, a guy like Langoliers is tremendous to have going forward, because as Ben could probably agree to, or tell me I'm completely wrong, it's totally fine too. When it comes to ratio stats, as this season gets going even farther now, it's harder and harder to fix big holes in ratios. So a guy like Langoliers that in preseason where you're like didn't want to deal with the batting average issue might not be an issue any longer. So something to keep in mind, but he's been awesome. Really curious to see if he can get that 30 plus mark by the end of the season. Maybe, you know, for an A's team to have 50 RBIs this year is already pretty good, given they've been much better offensively than I think people gave him credit for. But I'll go Shea Langoliers as my catcher post ADP 200.
That's a good pick. And I'm looking at his year-to-date stats. He also has 4 steals, which is surprising. Yep. So, and that's only half the season. So if he can just double that, he's looking at 8 steals and 30 plus homers from a catcher. And I think at that point you can ignore the average. You just don't want to stack him on top of someone like Randy Arozarena or anyone who's hitting close to 200. Cause when you have a couple guys like that, then you really start to feel it. But yeah, things are getting a little more solidified with the ERA, WHIP, and average. You just gotta still be mindful though, cause they can be pretty bunched up still. It's kind of crazy how in roto leagues, the stats can fluctuate so often. And this far into the year, it's everyone's so competitive and they're doing the best they can. So you always got to stay on top of those things.
Yep, most definitely. Let's head to the first base position, a position we've talked about being pretty top heavy and just ugly in general this season. So finding some all-stars at the first base position wasn't the easiest thing to do, but who do you have at your all-star?
So my pick is actually someone who when I came on, I think week one of the season, we did 5 bold predictions. And one of mine was that Jake Cronenworth would be a top 150 player. And according to Razzball's 12-team player rater, he is number 87. So nice. Things are looking good for that bold prediction. And Cronenworth, he's one of those boring guys. You're not really going to be excited to have him in a 12-teamer, but in a 15-teamer, he's consistent as they come. He's had a couple of down years last couple of seasons, but he's sort of bounced back. They've had Cronenworth been batting in the top of the lineup for the Padres around Machado and Tatis Jr. and when Xander was there. And on the year, Cronenworth has almost 50 runs, 50 RBI, so that's awesome, especially where you drafted him, 13 homers, so on a 20-plus pace. And he's hitting .257, which is definitely – a little bit better than he's done over the last couple seasons. And with average being lower this year, it definitely helps out a lot. And not to mention, he's also second base eligible. So if I have Cronenworth on one of my mid events, and I've definitely moved him around throughout the season. And he's always been in my lineup in that 15 teamer. So it's just that steady production kind of gets overlooked sometimes. And it's definitely more of what kind of league you're in is how you value Cronenworth. But even a 12 teamer, he's been super helpful this year.
Is that the main event you're winning by chance?
No, it's actually the one that was my favorite going into the season. It's the one that has guys like Pablo, Ozzy, Julio was my first round pick. So it's just been all these guys that have kind of come up short. I got Jake Berger on that team. It's most of my early picks aren't that good. I mean, I'm sitting like around 80 points, which isn't that's good in a 12 teamer, but in a 15, it's like between 10th and 8th most of the time. It's got to have a hot. The hitting's gotten better. Some of the guys are trying to wake up. It's just trying to. I don't have high expectations at this point. It's just one of those things where you're just trying to see how high you can finish and maybe like catch third place.
On the bright side, those players you just mentioned that are struggling in the first half, we can all wouldn't be shocked if they had good second half type thing. So that's a you never know. You never know. It's not over yet, folks. For me, I'm going with the Candyman. I loved Jaime Candelario coming into the season. I had some pushback by some because I was like, look at he had 22 homers last year at 251, played for the Nats and the Cubs. He looked healthy, this and that. I got pushback and I got it, but I understood it a little bit. But going into Great American Small Park, producing 241 average, 16 homers, 4 stolen bases. He's producing a little bit of everywhere that you're looking for it. And when you're looking at Candelario, the barrel rate's the same as last year. The hard hit rate's just a little lower than last year. He's an overproducer or overperformer. And that's been his kind of, you know, MO in recent years, but he's doing it and in a good ballpark and in a pretty productive lineup. So the first base, third base eligibility is nice. And those numbers he has, I'll take considering how slow he started out the season. So he's finished the last couple of months very, very strong. So I got Candelario as my first baseman of choice.
It's a good pick. I think we talked about him a couple of weeks ago as maybe a June standout or something like that. And yeah, he's benefiting from Cincinnati for sure. I think that was some of the appeal of taking him where he was going in drafts. And I think I'm looking at his week by week breakdown. I think Candelario kind of slowed down right after we talked about him, but he had a good week last week and seems to be back on the right track. So yes, like you mentioned with Ryan last week on your corner review, it's first and third have been pretty awful to fill, at least especially in 15 teamers. So if you could have Candelario, the flexibility is awesome. And so he stays healthy. Cause I think he had battled some, I think you mentioned it, but maybe like a shoulder thing or something, but yeah, the Reds need him healthy too. Cause they're low on bats right now.
Yes, they are. And the honorable mention I will discuss, and we don't have to go deep into the honorable mentions, but I wanted to bring him up because it's a testament to the position being rough and the 15 team aspect you mentioned. Ryan O'Hearn hitting 274 with 11 home runs on the season and 3 steals. Like that's nothing to get, you know, that's pretty good, especially in a 15 team league, plays against all right-handed pitching in a good Orioles offense. So I want to give a shout out to O'Hearn who was going extremely late in drafts. I'll pull it up right here. If you look at Ryan O'Hearn, his ADP was almost 360 in OCs. So pretty nice return on Ryan O'Hearn. Second base, who do you have here? Because this is an amazing pick.
Well, I give the credit to Bryce Durang for having an amazing season so far. He was a DC favorite of mine because he was going, I think, in the 300s in draft and holds. And just like that late speed is always tough to find, especially in the draft and hold where you don't have the ability to add guys off waiver wire. But looking at his player page, Terang has basically matched his production from last year. He's the center of homers, 4 more steals, one fewer run, only 4 more RBI. But the big key with Terang is the average. He's hitting 277 this year after hitting 218 last year. I think I don't have the percentages up in front of me, but I think the big difference is the K rate. And he's fast. So hitting 218, I don't think the K rate was that high looking at the totals last year at 94 Ks, 400 at bats. So that's about 25% if you don't include the walks. So I think he just was unlucky with his BABIP last year. And this year, it's kind of evened out. And I have him on a couple teams. I had him on a lot more teams last year, Terang. So I'm glad I kind of went back to the well. But hopefully the average stays there. And I think that's a big part. When you have 30 steals and almost 280 average with a consistent playing time, that's why Terang's going to be so highly rated this year. And I don't have the exact ranking, but I think he's 53rd overall, according to Razzball. So that's a fifth-round pick in a 12-teamer, fourth in a 15. So that's a kind of pick that really helps you win your league when you get that much value out of a pick that late.
Yep, love it. Leading off for the Brewers, hitting in front of Adames and William and others. And Yelich, it's going to help a ton as the season goes on. So I'm with you on that one. For me, I think people expected this name somewhere on this show. It was just given that Luis Rengifo would be an all-star in the second half of the season. He had an ADP of 257 for OCs, and he's hurt right now, but he entered the break hitting 315, which is one of the tops in all of baseball, 6 homers and 22 stolen bases. And to me, those numbers are even more impressive considering how hard it was for him to find regular playing time to start the season, which I was one of the more vocal ones of what are we doing around Washington, but took enough injuries. Now Rengifo hits every day, usually hitting second when healthy. He should be back right after the All-Star break, hopefully too, which will be nice. But yeah, the Luis Rengifo, if he can continue to hit for, even if he hits 280, he'll hit enough, like 5 to 6 more home runs and steal maybe 20 more bases. And it's like the dude just runs. So he is a tremendous talent that to me is putting up like Nico Horner type stats and a lot later in the draft.
Yeah, I have to credit you and Ryan for your crowning him the mascot for Bubba and the Bloom. And I was able to get him on one team, so I didn't miss out on the breakout, but it's definitely great seeing those steals. I remember when we were talking about the Angels saying they wanted to steal more, I wasn't really sure who would benefit. Ended up being Trout why it was healthy. I figured Zach Neto would get it too, and I never really thought of Rengifo because he only had got like 6 steals last couple of years and decent playing time, so he didn't really stand out as a fast guy to me. But the 22 steals this year has been super helpful where I have him because they kind of replace what I was expecting from Tyro. Plus the average and the eligibility, it's just been a mainstay in my lineup. And he's actually on that main event you were asking about, the good one. So I'm really hoping that he does come back this Friday because my team could need him.
It's only fitting he's on a winning team, so that's good. The honorable mention would be Jonathan India, hitting 275, 8 homers, 8 stolen bases. It's kind of happened over like the last month and a half of the season because it was a rough start to the year. But just want to throw a shout out to Jonathan India, who's like flashing that rookie of the year form now that he's gotten healthy. So he's looking pretty good. Curious to see how his second half goes. Shortstop. This is another fun one. Who's your all-star at shortstop?
That is Mr. Mason Wynn of the St. Louis Cardinals. He was also one of my bold predictions. I chose Mason Wynn and I forget who the other player was, but I compared him and someone else to this year's Ha-Seon Kim. And I think the other one was CJ Abrams as a breakout, that kind of breakout. But Wynn hasn't really lived up to exactly that performance, I don't think. But he's really returned value with the average and the steals. He's not stealing as much as I would like him to. But one thing that really has helped his value, and I wasn't projecting this earlier, was his lineup position. So now he's leading off for the Cardinals when he was batting 9th to start the year. But he's on pace for roughly like maybe 80 runs and 70 RBI, double-digit homers and steals, maybe 20 steals. And he's got a 284 average right now. So in a 15, it's a lot more valuable. I think he's still relatively value on the 12-team player rater. Let me just pull him up. He's 173, so he was going more than double that. He was going 350, 360 in drafts, maybe close to 400 in certain drafts. But, yeah, he was someone I liked late, and I got him on a handful of teams. And I considered dropping him at one point when, but because of how short stop was at the time, I was like, I can't really afford it. He has so much playing time. He's got that prospect upside, and I'm glad I stayed with him because he's been a staple in a couple of my fab teams and a couple of DCs as well.
Yeah. ADP of around 350. That was a lot of 12s that I was in, he wasn't even drafted. So that was a very, very smart pick on that one. So that is good. Pat Monahan in the chat says Adamas is going much later than he should have. Agreed. He had a down season in 2023, which pushed that down because 2023, that ADP went up after 2020. And Ben and I know very well how 2023 went with Willie Adamas. So, yes, he's flashing that 2022 form yet again, which probably makes us not the happiest people, but happy for him, just not happy in general on that one. My shortstop, and I was either going to put him here or the outfield, but the guy's going to put here. Ben's using the outfield, and I'm just glad they're on the sheet. So we'll talk about the other guy in a minute. I'm going Sedan Rafaela of the Red Sox, and his ADP was around 250. It's been a really interesting season for Rafaela. Started out really good, then had some like bad production / playing time once in a while. Now he's locked back in as usually the shortstop every day, plays center field when Duran gets a day off. But he's got 11 homers, 11 stolen bases, 246 average, 45 runs, 52 RBIs. Like, the dude could be 2020 with like 80 runs, 80 RBIs, hitting close to 250. Like, that's an outstanding season. for a guy with his positional flexibility for a young player in this situation. So I'm going to go Sedan Rafael, a guy that I know there's a lot of high hopes for. His defense is elite, which keeps him in the lineup. And early in the season, maybe why he was drafted so late to begin with is, you know, Trevor Story was technically playing shortstop. You had the outfield when O'Neill got traded to Boston, kind of clogged that up. So it made it interesting to see when Rafaela would play. But as all good things happen, good players, cream rises to the top. And Rafaela plays pretty much every day and produces in a big way. So I have Sedan Rafaela as my shortstop late round all-star.
It's a great pick, Bubba. I remember in main events, he was one of those hype guys that kind of creeped closer to pick 200 than the other direction. It was like him and Parker Meadows. And I remember thinking that Rafael was one of those examples of not buying the hype. But now that we've given it some time, he's really turned the season around, because in April he hit a 522 OPS, only two home runs, four steals. The steals is good. You're kind of expected that with Rafaela, but then he had five homers in May. So far he has three in July, and he has a much more respectable lineup for the season. And like you mentioned, the flexibility keeps him in the lineup. I know I was with some friends, the Red Sox fans, they had the game on, and then he switched to center field after playing shortstop in like the eighth and ninth inning. And so the Red Sox value that. And he's on pace for a great rookie year in 2020 with 80 plus RBI and runs would be awesome from where he was going. And the average isn't hurting you anymore. Like I mentioned, it's 246 on the year. And if you, based on how he's performed post April, it should be continue to climb as the weeks go on.
Yep. Could be a big season for Rafaela. The honorable mention I had here going three picks ahead of Rafaela at 246 is Carlos Correa. I've always clowned on Carlos Correa, and I'm not taking that back by any means, because he's been just healthy enough this year. But the dude has 13 homers and a 308 average. Like, he's been that batting average alone has been a tremendous help. No steals, because that's not what he does, but just want to throw that out there. Correa has been very, very good if you waited on the position or at middle infield for you. Third base, you got one of my guys that I pound the drum for every single season, because to me, this person's boring, but boring is beautiful. So who's your third base all-star?
Yeah, a lot of my picks might be boring, but my pick for third base, he could have been a second base pick as well, sure, but it's Ryan McMahon. And did you and Ryan have a Bubba in the Bloom bet for McMahon?
I probably did, because he was always making fun of me like for him, and I think I compared him to some player he liked, and all of a sudden he's like, oh, God. And so I'm pretty sure we did, and I'm pretty sure it's going very well in my favor.
Yes, that way. Knock on wood. Hopefully it continues. I only have a McMahon on one team. It is a main event, though, so I appreciate that. He's on pace for, I think, a career year. He has 48 runs, 14 home runs, 45 RBI, three steals. He's in 272, which is the highest of his career currently. The Ks are still there. That's always been an issue with McMahon, but the Coors helps with the bat, but it balances it out. So with some Coors guys, you want to start them only at home, but I think McMahon's too good where he's not going to be as good on the road, but you still got to play him. Unless you have a really good deep bench and a 12-teamer, maybe you have some options, but otherwise I would just keep him in my lineup. And he's kind of slowed down a little bit, I think, McMahon, but hasn't hit a homer in a few weeks, but I think rest up over the break and he could keep it going in the second half. I'm not worried about him slowing down at all.
Yeah, wherever I have McMahon, including 12s, he pretty much plays every day. So I'm like, that's just because I don't have, if we talk about third base, not a whole lot of depth there. So he's pretty much locked in. And a funny story about McMahon. So at the All-Star game, he's the Rockies representative. And most guys, you know, they just go and they mingle, they're having a good time, take some batting practice. McMahon was the only player out there having coaches hit him ground balls during batting practice. And I'm just like laughing, because maybe he's just trying to soak it all up, or maybe he wants to stay in his routine. I don't know what it is, but it just goes to show you he's just a different breed that continues to get better, or at least stays good and is shining more this season. My guy, again, could have been second base also, is Jordan Westberg. ADP was around 306 this year. And Westberg, you know, he had that hype last year, kind of, you know, was okay, but not great in his first kind of go around in limited action with the Orioles. Comes up this year, gets named the everyday second base. He's playing second and third pretty much every game, at least one position. But he's hitting 271, Westberg is, with 15 homers and six stolen bases, 46 runs and 50 RBIs. So he's just sprinkling the stat sheet. He's hitting for a really solid average, I think 270 all day. But the power I love, if he can get to 25 and, you know, 90-90 with 10 stolen bases, Jordan Westberg is going to be a steal past pick 300 for me. I have a few shares of him at either second base or third base this year, but it also helps the old adage, plays in a good offense. So he's benefiting tremendously from that. And there was a part of time earlier in the season, it felt like we all had to drop Jordan Westberg. And if you hung on to him, it's paid off in a big, big way. So he is my all-star at third base.
It's a very good one. And I'll admit, I was kind of scared off by Westberg, A, because he's a righty, and B, he's playing in Baltimore. So I didn't know if the power would play up, and I didn't think he would steal as much. And at least half of that's been wrong, because he has 15 homers so far, and he's Razzball's 63rd overall player. So I completely whiffed on Westberg. I didn't go for him in free agents when he was available. I don't know if he was in any of my teams. It's been so long. But, yeah, he's really breaking out. And part of the problem, too, with Westberg was I wasn't sure how much he would play, because I know the Orioles like to play Ramon Urias, and there was Jorge Mateo there, too, and Gunnar was definitely going to be in the lineup. It was just playing time and if the power would be there, because I didn't trust the speed. And six steals is fine, but if he didn't have if he had, like, 8 and 6, that would be not as good. But the 15 really helps, and once again, the two position eligibilities is great. And then he also gets the middle infield, corner infield, not just the two positions. So it's very valuable. And I'm interested to see what his final line's like, because I haven't looked too closely to see how the power would play outside of Baltimore, but or like if you'd have more homers per se. But yeah, so far a great start for Westbrook.
Yep, been pretty fun to watch him develop. Couple honorable mentions, Willie Castro. He's actually a real-life all-star this year, which goes to show you a few things. But the joke was always, you know, you take him in draft and holds and in other leagues because you get playing time with injuries with the Twins. Well, he's actually kept jobs now. The guys have come back. He's actually produced well. And then I want to mention Colt Keith. He was a very popular late-round pick, fizzled, so a lot of people dropped him. But he's come back with a vengeance the last, like, month and a half, playing phenomenal. And if that carries over in the second half, that could be great as well. Outfield, this is an awesome one. This is a guy I completely whiffed on. I ignored, said I want nothing to do with, but that's my normal rookie situation. So who's your outfielder?
My outfielder is Jackson Merrill, who we were saying earlier could have been the shortstop as well, because that's where he's eligible on the NFBC platform. And I think I'm pretty sure we talked about Merrill a couple weeks ago, so I won't go too crazy, but he's having a phenomenal breakout year as a rookie. He's been the best Jackson of the rookie class. He's only 21 and he's pacing for 2020, and his average has dropped a little bit. He hit 217 last week or 2 weeks ago, and then 105 the week before the All-Star break. But Merrill's still hitting 278 on the year and hitting, playing every day. There's no platoon issues, even though he's a lefty. But I'm glad I was able to get him a couple draft and holds late once I realized that he was in a get a shot at the opening day rosters and gain that extra eligibility in the outfield. But he's been a great pick, and I don't blame you for being skeptical. Like, I don't have any of the other rookies. It was just that Merrill was going the latest, and I figured, okay, at that price, it's not as big of a whiff if he doesn't pan out.
Yeah, when he was drafted, he was shortstop only at the time, which was fun as well. So knowing my brain, it was a combination of rookie and, hey, I already got the position figured out. Why am I doing this? So on and so forth. So it's a double whammy on that one. And he's been, I think the power has been even more impressive to me than anything with Jackson Merrill. That's like, and that's come on really strong of late, but pretty good stuff there indeed. My all-star is kind of lazy, but he fits the mold. ADP of 211. I'm saying lazy on me, not on the hitter, but because he's this next year, there's no chance he's going after pick 200. So, and this is Stephen Kwan. And I know why he went after 200, because I was like, oh, he's just batting average and maybe steals a few bags, but there's no power and whatever. And I kept saying all draft season, I'm like, I love the average because, you know, we talked about other guys where it's skeptical. Did I think he'd hit 352? No, I'll be clear there. So I'm like, he's like a 310 guy pretty easily. It was the runs I loved leading off for Cleveland. I'm like, the dude can get you 120 runs scored. Like, that's legit. But the power, he has 9 home runs. He has 5 steals. He's just been an absolute beast, and he missed a month of the season, and he's doing this. Like, if he can stay healthy in the second half of the season, the sky's the limit, it feels like, because that Cleveland Guardians offense is really good. At least the top half of it is really good with Naylor and Ramirez and company. So I think Stephen Kwan's been amazing. He actually was the leadoff hitter for the American League on Tuesday night, and there's no chance He's probably a top 150 pick, at least by closer to like 120 next year. I wouldn't be shocked just the way the system works these days with hype trains. But yeah, Stephen Kwan's my outfielder.
I mean, Bubba, I almost picked him myself, so you can't be too, you can't be. I thought about it. I go, no, I'll go Jackson because I have Jackson on more teams. But yeah, Kwan's been, he's been great. The chase for 400 kind of went out the window a while ago. He's at 350 now, but you can't complain about that. It's weird though, looking at his line. So he almost has twice as many home runs as steals, and he almost has 10 home runs. So it's interesting for the power, but it's kind of concerning with the speed. So a lot of his value has come from the average, which 352 is like, I think 40 points higher than Luis Arias, who was supposed to be the best average hitter in fantasy baseball. So if Kwan can keep, I don't expect him to hit 350 the rest of the year, and maybe hits like 280 or 290 in the second half, and then he finishes around 330. Still going to be awesome, but the speed going into next year, I guess this is more of this, that kind of discussion is, will he steal again? Cause he was at 19 and 21 the last 2 years, and yeah, he missed time, but he should have at least 10 or so by now.
He's been caught stealing four times. He's only attempted to steal nine times, which is crazy.
And I feel like the Indians, well, J-Ram's running freely. And I don't know about the other guys in the team. I kind of try to track the top 10 steals leaders when I go into Fab, and I haven't done in a couple of weeks, so I'm not sure where the Guardians stand, but I don't know if Kwan, I'm sure his sprint speed is fine. He's still 26, so I doubt he's slowed down that much. I don't know, maybe he's getting too many doubles or something and too many homers. He's not on first base as much as he used to be, but yeah, I agree. His price will go back up probably at least what it was going into last year, which was kind of closer to pick 100. But I don't know. We'll see. He might be an avoid at that price because it's kind of like he's like ping ponging back and forth between that overpriced and underpriced, it seems like.
Yep, I'm with you. The honorable mention, there's a lot of outfielders obviously to go through, but I just wanted to throw a shout to Brent Rooker, who after last season, people like, oh, it's a flash in the pan. Dude's hitting 291 with 21 home runs at the break. That's ridiculous. Ridiculous. If you have Brent Rooker on your team, like that's game changer stuff, because just for fun, Rooker's ADP was 291. So that's like outfield four or five on some 12 team leagues. That's outstanding. Maybe a bench player on some 12 team leagues. So I want to throw Brent Rooker a shout on that one. All right, let's talk starting pitcher, where again, there was a ton of options, but I think we picked two of the pretty good ones. So who's your first?
My first is Tanner Houck of the Red Sox. He was someone I was big on early in draft and hold in that first part of the draft season. And I kind of stopped because I started taking him on like two or three teams. And then I kind of pivoted to his teammate, Garrett Whitlock, for Fab Leagues. And I mean, you can't – hindsight's 2020, of course. But I'm glad I have Houck where I do. And I don't know, where he was going around pick 300, I was intrigued by the underlying skills. And in 2023, he wasn't as good. He struggled a little bit. But prior to that, 2022, 2021, the XFIP, XERA, FIP, all those indicators were like in the threes or twos. And he has had an issue with walks slightly last year, and also homer to fly ball rate spiked in 2023. But now this year, Houck has a 2.54 ERA, his best walk per nine of his career, and also the best walk rate, only 5.5%. His K minus walk percentage is 18, which is very close to 20, which is always like that upper echelon mark that we look for. And he's kind of been unlucky. His left on base is 69.7%. BABIP's maybe a little lucky, 276, so it's kind of evening out. But he's already surpassed his career high in innings. Houck had 106 last year, and now he's 117. So I don't know how long he'll stay in the rotation, but if the Red Sox stay competitive, they probably need him because they've had so many injuries in the rotation. And his velocity's down compared to previous years, but now he's a full-time starter. That makes sense. So to be expected. And if he can keep the walks in check and the home run rate in check, I think he can keep this going and probably end around a 3 ERA. I don't expect to be a sub 3 all year, but you never know with the way the pitching environment is this year.
Yep, I agree. I liked a lot of those Red Sox. You know, there's Cutter Crawford, there's Houck, there's Whitlock. They're all going late, and a lot of those because of the innings pitch concerns, like how would that be utilized type situation. So that's a big one to keep in mind. But hey, it's first half All-Stars. He's been a first half All-Star. Doesn't matter, you know, for the conversation. And it's the old adage. There's going to be a lot of guys that are getting shut down in the second half because there was a lot of those concerns in the first half. We'll have to keep adjusting from there. But you got one of the good ones to ride until that happens. So that's big with Tanner Houck. His ADP was like 327 too, which is outstanding, like undrafted in some 12s. I took Jack Flaherty. Hat tip to my co-host Ryan Bloomfield. This one was on him, and I've told him that many times. He got my attention changed. I think I have him at least two out of the three OCs I'm in because of that. And his ADP was around 280 in the end of draft season. Jack Flaherty, outside of the occasional back issue these days, 313 ERA through 16 starts, 263 Sierra through 16 starts, and a 28% K to walk. He has been amazing. A 4.3% walk rate. He's channeling the old school, awesome Jack Flaherty. Now we just need that back to hold up. And, you might see innings issues with him because he's been so hurt so much late. But he did end up throwing 144 last year, so we should be okay in that regard. But I love Jack Flaherty. Big fan of Jack Flaherty. And I just want the back to get together so we can finish things strong.
Oh, it's good for you that you bought in because I did not. His last few years have been so bad, results wise and even underlying metrics. But yeah, like his walk rate has, it's been cut so much. Only 4.3%. The K rate's 32%. So that's a 27.8 K minus walk percentage. That's got to be as at the top of the list. I can't imagine anyone else having one that's much higher than that. And yeah, so it's like you mentioned the back. It's good that he came back from that. That was a little scary thing because I know he's had injury problems in the past. That kind of what derailed him from those two breakout years, 2018, 2019. And I'm glad it's props to Ryan for being big on Flaherty. I've heard other people mention on their podcast that they were in on Flaherty because of Ryan. And I did not cash in, unfortunately. I'm not listening to Ryan more, I guess, or something. But
he's not always right. Trust me.
Hopefully, he's not listening because maybe he won't know about that comment when you guys record later. But yeah, so it's been a great year for Flaherty, and it'd be interesting to see what happens. Is he a free agent after this year? I feel like he only had a 1-year contract.
Let me double check. I just had his page up here. It might only be a 1-year deal. It might be one with an option. Jack Flaherty. 1-year contract, free agent after this year. He's making himself some money right now as the kids. Yeah, that's good.
He'll probably get traded too then at the deadline, I'd imagine.
That's a good point as well, because they're talking Tariq Skubal's even on the market. So you definitely know Jack Flaherty is. So that is an option. That'll be interesting. The Giants trade, sign and trade, long-term deal. I don't care, do it, but they won't. Honorable mention, just had to throw it out. His ADP was close to 200, but Christopher Sanchez has been everything expected of him and more. He's been great. Ground ball rate's amazing. I'd like to see more strikeouts, but overall he's been pretty, pretty good. All right, let's talk relief pitchers. And the one you picked, it had to be picked. He has been one of the best closers in all of baseball, let alone best value closers in all of baseball. So who's your all-star?
There wasn't much to choose from because closer has been so. Yeah, so I'm like, I'm not gonna be nice and let you get an easy one. I'm like, I'm gonna take who I thought was the best one, and I did give you Renhifo though, so I think I could take Kyle Finnegan, and I have him on. I think one. I don't know if I have two teams with Finnegan, but I have one. It's that main event that's doing really well, and I think that's a big reason why the main event's doing so well. If you can get a value closer late, like Finnegan's been, that really helps, especially if you. If the plan is to wait on closer, it's a more of a draft strategy topic, but I think it's really helpful if you can hit late on a closer. It's risky, but it pays off if you can do it. And so one of the issues with Finnegan right now is, will he get traded? Cause the Nats already traded Hunter Harvey to the Royals. And the thought was that Finnegan would be the one to leave. But I mean, as long as he's there now, it's still good. Cause Harvey was his main competition, or like the backup plan, I guess. There was talk that both would get traded, but I actually have Harvey on that team where I have Finnegan. So maybe I'll have two closers, but with how good Finnegan's been pitching at, there's a chance that depending on who he gets traded to, if he does get traded, maybe he's the closer still, who knows? That's more me being wishful with that possibility. But Finnegan, I think he's finally, it's always funny because people always try to pick out players at every position that are going to like flop. and everyone loves to pick on Kyle Finnegan, and he's kind of showed them up this year. The underlying numbers aren't the best, but his xFIP's 3.37. The ERA is 4.18, so a lot of hard contact. But the K and the walk rate numbers are pretty good. They've improved. At least the walk rate's improved compared to prior years. So I don't know if you can cash in on Finnegan. Maybe if you're deep in a reliever and a 12-teamer with trades, maybe try to flip him. But yeah, you've definitely profited from Finnegan if you have
him. Yeah, he was in a lot of like my third relievers on a lot of teams. So I loved Kyle Finnegan late. I was surprised when I saw Harvey go already. I wasn't shocked they traded both of them, but the fact they traded Harvey already, I'm like, are they going to actually keep Finnegan? Or what are we doing here? You never know with the Nats, but I figured Finnegan would be the first straw to go, not Harvey, but here we are. So that'll be fun. Pat in the chat says Mason Miller was dirt cheap. His ADP was 185. He did not qualify for the list. You mentioned Ronaldo Lopez. He did qualify. So he was one of those starting pitchers as well. My reliever, and it's fine that you took Finnegan because it's only fitting that the guy that was my most rostered player in the draft season, I should discuss. His ADP was 329 or about 330 during the end of draft season, and that's James MacArthur of the Kansas City Royals. It's not always pretty, 399 ERA. That's not the best thing for a closer, but it is a 330 Sierra, which is promising. 14.4% K to walks, not great, but he's only got a 5% walk rate, so it's just a lack of strikeouts. But what I do love from a guy that you're getting at a 330 ADP, he has 17 saves so far this season and 4 wins to top it off. So to get a guy at 330, basically the end of the draft, third closer situation, that's got 17 saves and 4 wins, and his ratios aren't killing you, like, to me, that's a closer I love to have. And he could be traded, but then again, they just traded for Hunter Harvey. So is Harvey the future closer? They keep him MacArthur. Lots of questions in Kansas City. The Central is still kind of up for grabs, let alone the wild card. So who knows what the Royals are doing over there. They're just staying good enough to, the questions aren't made yet or answered in Kansas City. So, yeah, MacArthur was the dude for me. But it was tough to find late guys, that's for sure. I didn't even put an honorable mention at that position because it was like, I was all, do I put Griffin Jacks? It was brutal. And then I saw MacArthur and I'm like, yep, we're good on this one, Ben. So
Trevor McGill could have been a good one too. I'm looking at the player grade right now.
That was one I was looking at before I saw MacArthur. I was just thinking, okay, I saw McGill's ADP. I guess Williams' injury was known by then. That makes sense. Okay. Yeah. Cause Williams' injury came late in draft season, so that could have had some effect on it for sure. Any final thoughts on the first half All-Stars? Fun list of guys that goes to show you, if you can I hate using the term get lucky late in drafts, but hit right late in drafts, you can have a major edge obviously on your leagues.
There's definitely luck, because like I was alluding to the late closers hitting on those. I considered Carlos Estevez, Kyle Finnegan, Alvarado was going in that range too, guys like that. And most of the guys have hit to some degree. I think so. There's another one I'm forgetting that hasn't been as good potentially, but it's definitely risky. And you definitely need a year with high turnover at the position if you're going to miss out on a late closer like that. Even those guys weren't that late. Like MacArthur was much later, but it's just, yeah, definitely luck plays a part. And the one last thing I will say though is that there could have been so many starters. Like we didn't pick Luis Gil. There was Seth Lugo stands out. Like he mentioned, Pat mentioned Ronaldo Lopez. There's countless guys that we could have picked. So starters could have been, we could have like 2 rotations each probably.
Yeah, it makes me really, and I know it's year to year, but it feels like it's happening more often. You can wait on pitching, man, or at least get like 1 or 2 aces maybe. And then you can wait. If you got to feel confident on the later picks. And if you miss them, you're going to be crying, but there's a lot of them. Like you could probably have a good 4 or 5 starters leaving the draft if you wait and get 3 or 4 of them later. Like you probably could pull that off. It's starting to feel that way more and more. So we'll see. Again, it's a year-to-year thing. Could always change. But fun little exercise, and it'll be fun to see where this ends when the season is over, to see if these names still stand out as the All-Stars after pick 200 or not. All right, let's talk Fab recap, my friend. Week 17, OC Fab, 12-team leagues. And the most added player, this was kind of expected this week because wasn't really – available anywhere until last week, is one Reese Hines of the Cincinnati Reds, picked up in 219 leagues, as high as 475 and as low as a dollar, because we're talking OCs, of course. In his first week of action, because he got called up on Monday, fittingly enough, Hines hit safely in 6 of 7 games. He hit 5 home runs. He had 9 extra base hits, 11 RBIs, 2 stolen bases. But Ben, there was a lot of people saying, you know, the minor league numbers, he only hit like 216. He had power and speed, but a lot of strikeouts. There was concerns there. So when you entered FAB, what were your thoughts on Rhys Hines?
I thought I wouldn't be able to afford him because of how big his week was. And I heard some other people talk, I think it was Waxman's podcast, how Hines is shortstop eligible right now in the main event, yes. NFBC. And it makes no sense. I don't think he played shortstop in the minors.
Real quick. Someone hit me up with a question, and I can't remember if it was my Substack or where. He's shortstop third base eligible on Fantrax. I know. I was baffled.
How is baffled. That? That's weird. Yeah. I mean, he was really – must have been like a nobody that none of the sites knew anything about, apparently. It's the only explanation I can give for that. But, yeah, so Hines had 126 strikeouts and 296 at bats in AAA, and you mentioned the 216 average. So usually it doesn't get easier when you get called up to the majors. So I was skeptical of that. I mean, in the short sample so far, Hines only has 7 strikeouts and 27 at bats. So that's around 25%, which is fine. I mean, plenty of guys succeeded at that rate, and the steals have been nice. He has power and speed, and since I'm not sure exactly how the Cincinnati situation looks with him being able to stick in the lineup, but we all know about the ballpark is great. And he's playing right field right now. Who's coming back?
Fairchild supposed to come back after the All-Star break, and he was called up when Fairchild left. So that's where I'm curious to see where all the dust settles. Does Austin Slater just get bounced, who they just traded for? Because he was like, they say, sorry, dude, you're out. And Hines sticks around. Does Hines platoon? Because Hines didn't platoon last week. I have a lot of questions on this.
And Friedel's coming back too. I think maybe not as early as Fairchild, but I think Friedel by the end of July. And at that point, they got Steer, he's playing first, but then they have Fraley, Benson. Yeah, so I mean, at the minimum, Hines would, he'd be out of a spot unless he's he'd be short side platoon, or Fraley's sitting, or Benson's sitting. So it might get tight quickly. And if you're spending a lot of FAB on Hines, it might be disappointed. But, I mean, at this point, if you have that much left, you might as well spend it. I mean, some teams have $100 left. But, I knew the price would be too much for me, and I needed outfielders more. I didn't want to go crazy this week with the extended break. I was looking at streaming for the weekend, and I was kind of trying to stay small with my bids.
Yeah, we'll have fun talking about it. And, like, they're going to keep playing him as long as he's hitting. But it's just like when he hits that first rookie slump, how does that start playing things out? That's the question. We'll talk about – because I got him in a couple places, but I didn't overspend for him. That's the beauty of OCs, of course. So we'll talk about the three leagues I'm in and how the prices varied. But, yeah, some leagues people went crazy for him. I saw in a lot of mains he was like pretty much a triple digit on most formats. I know, like, some got him for cheaper, and Waxman had the tweet of all the leagues out there and everything. So – that was interesting, but for the most part, people went after him, and I get it. Power, speed, if you can find it, it's great. Great ballpark. I'm just most concerned about playing time. That's where I'm at, so we'll have to kind of wait and see on that one. Hey, I liked Outman last week. That looks like a crash and burn because Hayward's coming back on Friday. I could see Outman getting sent back, but I actually spent about the same amount of money on Hines as I spent on Outman, so we'll kind of call it a wash, hopefully, in the end on that one, but we'll wait and see because I guess technically it'd be like double the money. All right. One of my favorites here, and worked out pretty well this week. Lawrence Butler of the Oakland Athletics. He was picked up in 182 leagues, as high as 112, as low as a dollar. Didn't pick him up last week, unfortunately, so that was a bummer because that meant I missed out on all of the home runs. He hit 3 on Sunday. He hit 5 total last week. But what I wanted to highlight, and it's what I've talked about in a lot of my content written and podcasting over the last week with Lawrence Butler, dude went to the minor leagues, improved his strikeout rate tremendously this last time through. Since July, in the bigs, hit striking out 25%, which is good for him. But more importantly, hitting 317, 7 homers, 2 steals, 17 RBIs. And he's moved up to leadoff for the Oakland Athletics, which is nice. Again, we talked about how good he's been hitting and how good the team has been hitting. The biggest thing is he still platoons. Doesn't matter how good he's going to play. I doubt they're going to let him play every day. We'll see, maybe. But still playing primarily versus righties, leading off and playing well. So I was all in on Lawrence Butler. And honestly, I wanted Butler over Rhys Hines. So I was surprised by the difference in, you know, max bids, 475 to 112.
Well, the difference between Butler and Hines is that Butler's been here for a while before. He's not.
He's let people down. He's let people down before.
Yeah, so he struggled in his time in the majors, and Hines have a fresh slate and five homers in like 2 weeks. So it makes sense, but I don't think it's necessarily a smart thing to do. Yeah, you covered a lot of the points with Butler, the platooning, the K rate on the year. You said it has improved, so that's good, but it's almost 30% his K rate. After this week, I remember looking at Butler's Statcast, I think before it probably updated. There's a lot more red now than I think when I looked last time. And five homers in a week will do that for you. The XBA is 236, which is respectable. It's actually above what his season-long average is of 211. Yeah, I was hoping to get stream Butler just for the weekend series coming up if I needed an outfielder. And unfortunately, once you hit three home runs on Sunday in MVC, that's not going to happen anymore. No. You're not going to get a cheap bid on whoever does that. So yeah, I got left out in the dark on with Butler, but there were times earlier in the year when I thought about streaming him. I think he had stretches earlier where he got hot. He's such a streaky player, but yeah, hopefully he's young. He's 24, and I some of the concerns I've heard, which I agree with, is if the A's trade all the guys who are doing well for them right now, what's going to be left for Butler in the lineup? I mean, he'll get all the playing time, which is great, but will the run production be there? And that you definitely need that too with the, I mean, especially in deeper leagues, you need something from whoever you're starting. And he has the power and the speed. This, the average is a risk, and those runs and RBI totals potentially too.
No, and the trade thing's a very valid point. I'm just hoping the upside's there because he's 24 years old. So I'm hoping that means we have an improvement of things to come in that regard with Lawrence Butler. So I'm a big fan, and we'll see where it continues to go. And do I expect him to be this good? No, but that's, I know I had to raise my bids on Sunday when he had three homers. That was a bummer. So that's just the way we live in. And I need, and the leagues I got aggressive, and we'll talk about it, is the teams where my total points hitting was bad. Like I needed hitting help very badly. So I'm being a little more aggressive in the hitting department. We'll see if it pays off or not. Luis L. Ortiz of the Pittsburgh Pirates picked up in 92 leagues, as high as 39, as low as a dollar. Ortiz has entered the Pirates rotation. He's made three starts for the Pirates now, going at least 5 2/3. He's gone 17 2/3 in the three starts, allowed one run in each start, and he has a total of 16 strikeouts, about a K an inning in each start almost. So he's been very good. Once a highly touted prospect that never really figured it out. Pitch mix has changed. Are you in on a guy like Luis L. Ortiz?
I am, and because of injuries, he's actually been starting in one of my DCs for many weeks now. So I've been able to benefit from the production. With guys like this, sometimes you miss out on them on your bench, and then when you start them, finally they get blown up. But luckily, I haven't had that issue with Ortiz yet. Knock on wood. He's someone I've written about in my article on Sports Ethos as a deep league NFL main event edition, or like an NL only. The only thing that's kind of frustrating with Ortiz, and I mean, I knew this playing him in my DC, but it's the role is always changing, it seems like. So if you go on like Roster Resource right now, he's not projected in the Pirates rotation. But if you go to RotoWire, their starter grid, he's projected to start next Monday. So it's always a question of what's his role on the Pirates. But even if he is a follower for an opener, he has a good chance for a win. And he'll the way he's pitching, he'll get you maybe 4 or 5 strikeouts per outing. And one of the big things with Ortiz this year that I really like and was an issue for him last year is the walk rate. He only has 19 walks in 66 innings. And over the last 5 weeks, has only walked 2 batters. So he's definitely got the control in check, which has helped him succeed a lot more this year. He's got a 2.83 ERA in the year, 3 starts. So a lot of, like I said, a lot of bulk relief work, but that's still valuable in the deep league. And if he can stick in the rotation, he could be that prospect height that you mentioned he had last year. But just keep an eye on the role. And but like I said, he's valuable no matter what he does. Maybe if he's a bulk reliever, you get like more 2-start weeks out of him. And with quotes, 2-start weeks, even if he's out of the bullpen.
Yeah, no, I was very much interested in him. I don't think I got him anywhere this week, but we'll obviously double check in a bit. But yes, Luis L. Ortiz, as Joe G says in the chat, make sure it's that, not the other Luis Ortiz. Just there's a Phillies Ortiz and a Pirates Ortiz. You want the Pirates one. So make sure of that one. AJ Puck, he was added in 70 leagues, as high as $50, as low as a dollar. Two reasons here, potentially thinking Tanner Scott gets traded and Puck's the closer. But I also wanted to mention, since leaving the rotation on May 13th, Puck has made 25 appearances out of the bullpen. He's allowed runs in only three of those appearances. Two of them allowed three earned runs and one in one. So he's allowed seven earned runs total, which is a marked improvement on what we saw as a starter, which has given him a 2.39 ERA, a 2.98 Sierra over that stretch. 21% K to walk. It is a 26% K rate. So Puck's looked a lot better out of the bullpen. And if he can stick in and somehow get a closing role out of this, this is a great spec time to get AJ Puck.
I agree. And he is on my main event team where I have Hector Neris, who I've been very unsure of what his future holds. And I actually even started. So that team, I'm trying to preserve ratios because I have a pretty good strikeout total. And it's getting to that point where you don't want any blowups to knock you down in the standings. So I started Puck this past week, and four strikeouts and a win is what you hope for from a starter, like a seventh starter. So I was happy with that. And it's unsure of what the plan is with Puck and the Marlins. He could get traded. I've talked to our buddy Mike Curlin a lot about their like Puck's usage and who's next in line. And he thinks that he could get traded. I could see that happening because Puck's not that young. He's 29 now. And the way he's been pitching lately, it would make sense to try for the Marlins to cash in on him if they don't want him long-term. And I don't know, it's at least he's valuable right now, especially in a deeper league, kind of how Luis L. Ortiz was as a reliever. It's a definitely a good stash. And I think Scott's the most likely closer to get traded. And then if Puck stays, I'm sure he might get the first chance. I know like Calvin Foucher was in the closer monkey hierarchy. Some other guys have been in there ahead of Puck at times, but I feel like the usage always changes. And I think Puck is probably has the highest chance to be the closer if Scott gets traded. So I get the ad.
Yep. Totally with you on that. Hunter Harvey. This one was interesting to me. Picked up in 67 leagues, as high as $200, as low as $1. He just got traded to Kansas City. I guess people are speculating Harvey to be the new closer, which if they trade MacArthur, yeah, I don't see MacArthur just getting thrown out of the way unless I totally miss something there. So what's your thoughts on this Hunter Harvey move? Because this did surprise me a little bit.
Yeah, we kind of touched on Harvey when we were going through the Finnegan all-star pick, but I don't know if you realize, but Harvey had a rough 2 weeks before last week. He gave up 9 earned runs and five innings over weeks 14 and 15, and that ballooned his ERA a lot. So his ERA was under 3. Now it's 4.20. Whip's still good, 1.22. And I get the spec, but I mean, what were the prices for Harvey? So he was 200 net. Like that's when he's going somewhere with the closer and he wasn't even the closer on his own team. I don't get why you're doing that. It doesn't really make any sense to me, but I get the appeal. I know, I heard talk that maybe old friend Chris Bubich maybe is the lefty closer for the Royals if he starts pitching well. I don't know if they want to have a committee so that could eat into any saves for MacArthur and Harvey, depending on what happens with, like you mentioned, trading MacArthur potentially. But, yeah, I wouldn't break the bank on Harvey. I think I mentioned I do have him on that same team where I have Puck, actually. It's that Neris main event with Finnegan. So my closers are Neris and Finnegan, and I have Harvey and Puck on the bench, just trying to see, predict the chaos of trades. So I'm holding on to Harvey for now just to see what happens. And I'm not going to play him anytime soon, that's for sure. It's just more of a wait and see with the deadline looming and seeing what the Royals and other teams do.
For sure. Matt Wallner, this was a popular one. He was a popular late-round pick earlier this year that ended up getting dropped because he went to the minor leagues. But Matt Wallner was picked up in 64 leagues, as high as 27, as low as a dollar. Like, this could have maybe been a better pick than Rhys Hines. Time will tell on that one. But Matt Wallner, since he's played in 7 games since getting recalled, hit safely in 6 of 7, 2 homers, 5 RBIs. Still strikes out a ton. That's the Matt Wallner way. And he'll sit versus lefties more often than not. But what were your thoughts on Matt Wallner? Because I definitely had him down the waterfall where I had Hines and Butler bids in.
Yeah, so I have Max Kepler on a handful of teams on three of my four, so I kind of already, and I like how you and Ryan call it the line change for the Twins. Yeah, so I didn't really want to overbid trying to acquire more of that line, the lefty line for the Twins. And so, yeah, as you're talking, I see what you're talking about with that strikeout issue. So I didn't realize it was this bad. Walner has a 45, almost 46% K rate on the year and a 196 XBA. But, of course, like, he crushes the ball. The average X velocity, the barrel rate are all super high. They'd be near the top of the percentile list if he qualified. But, and you mentioned the platooning, he actually started the last two games against lefties, which is encouraging. I don't know how he'll do against lefties. That's also a question. That's why these guys platoon in the first place. But you maybe you almost want them to sit if they're not going to do well. But 27, much more reasonable price for Walner. The max of 27 is actually surprising. That's pretty low for an OC. Yep. I'm glad no one really went too crazy getting him. They probably realized he's a platoon bat and not guaranteed to stick around forever. So I get the ad, and I like that price.
They're probably focused on Hines and Butler, and also he's only added in 64 leagues. So the big names had targeted. I think people were just like, oh, we're not going to put a bunch of bids in this week because that's where we're at in this time of the year, folks. So get ready for this. When we keep talking bids, I keep laughing, but a lot of picks with no runner-up bids, that's the way it is these days. So, but it's always like I tell myself, oh, I'll just bid less, but you want the player, right? Like, it's like the last thing I want to do is this the one league where they decide to bid on him and I get hosed even if it was cheap. So we'll see how that all plays out. But I want to ask you about Eugenio Suarez, picked up in 62 leagues, as high as $54, as low as a dollar since July 1st. Eugenio Suarez, he's hitting .341, four home runs, 16 RBIs, walking 16% almost. Like, he's playing very well for the last couple of weeks, but this is Eugenio Suarez, who was beyond atrocious and about to lose his job at one time this season. So I guess you ride it while it's hot, or you believe in what we're seeing here from Suarez.
I think I've said on previous shows how I've been trying to drop Eugenio Suarez on a team, and I haven't been able to. And because of that, I've ended up playing him the last couple of weeks. So I've gotten lucky by having him on my team still. And I don't know, like, he's still hitting .216 despite how high he's been the last couple of years or a couple of weeks. The K rate on the year is pretty bad. And I remember saying that Lawler was the way he gets kicked out of the lineup, but Lawler's out for a long time now with I think he has a hamstring strain.
Yep.
So Suarez isn't really going anywhere. I don't know who else the Diamondbacks would have to replace him. And he's a veteran. I think he's going to keep playing unless they make a trade, which is possible, but I don't know. They're not a big money team, big market team where they're going to acquire huge contracts. I mean, they already have a pretty good team as it is. They have a lot of young players, but who knows? I don't know. Suarez isn't someone I would go for. He's more of a 15 teamer than a 12 because of the boring production. Like, I remember he projected pretty well. He was kind of going around Matt Chapman, and they kind of had similar profiles, high, decent power, good runs and RBIs just from playing in the middle of in the lineup. It was their projection. So I did draft Suarez on a couple of fab teams, but I caught him on one a while ago, and I don't know. I think people are just chasing the hot streak, and they're probably going to get more of what he's done most of the year. And that's not really much.
Yep. I'm with you. It's like, if you're going to get him in a 12, I would have gone a lot cheaper just because I know it's a stream. I know I'm going to end up dropping him. So don't go crazy on it, but hey, each of their own. Juan Yepes picked up in 58 leagues, as high as 39, as low as a dollar. Former Cardinal Juan Yepes. He got promoted to the Nationals when Joey Meneses got sent back to AAA. Yepes has been up for 10 games now. He's hit safely in all 10 games. Six doubles, no homers. Six runs, three RBIs, a stolen base. Walks 14%, doesn't strike out a ton. So the hit tool looks good, but the power isn't there. And when I wrote him up for something recently, I looked a little farther, and there's a reason it's not really there. Well, it's not as much. It's only a 40% ground ball rate, which isn't bad, but hits towards the middle of the field a lot, which is, it was just killing him. But what's your thoughts on Juan Yepes? 10 straight games with hits since getting called up, and we know the pedigree is there with Mr. Yepes.
He's someone who I would go for if you needed average. He's on a couple teams probably. I remember when Yepes was added in main events last weekend, I missed him getting called up. And I think because of how I look at playing time, he didn't have enough at-bats yet. And I just missed that he was called up and actually starting most games for the Nationals. But if you look at Yepes's StatCast, it's all red in like the XBA category and the K percentage, the walk percentage. Yeah, well, he has a good X slug 484 and his X Web was pretty good 413, but the hard hits not the best. The barrel rate's subpar, average X velocity is subpar. And I don't know, he has value. I know he was kind of intriguing when he was on the Cardinals. He had a decent time in the bigs in 2022, 12 homers and 274 plate appearances. That's decent power there. So maybe he's just like a small sample thing where he's hasn't really found his swing yet. But the big thing is he's a corner, he's a first baseman, he's getting playing time and with a good average. So I see why that's appealing. I missed out, I think, on getting him in my leagues because of the 15 teamers a little more aggressive. And I mean, what's he hitting? He's like 380 right now. So it's going to come down. So you're not going to get a 380 player going forward. You're probably going to get like a two something hitter, which is still good, but just hope, I don't think the bids were that high either. 39, yeah. So more reasonable bids. Like you probably go on the focus was on Hines and Butler. Yep. So not too bad for Yepes, but just don't expect a whole lot, I don't think.
Last guy I want to ask about here before we recap our fabs. It's a guy that Uncle Ted's talked about a lot lately. Angel Martinez of the Cleveland Guardians picked up in 53 leagues, as high as 43, as low as a dollar. Since he was recalled on July 4th, 275 average, two homers, hits second every game for the Guardians. Plays primarily center field, but plays a little bit of everywhere. Doesn't strike out a ton. Feels more like a 15-team play than a 12-team play. But do you have any thoughts on Angel Martinez? Because, like I said, I didn't really want him in a 12, but I guess I could see the 15-team appeal.
Yeah, I think that's where most of the value is with Martinez. I don't know much about him, so a 22 switch hitter. So that's good for him sticking in the lineup. I just pulled up his minor league page. So he only played 29 games. Maybe. He must have came off an injury. So far this year, five homers, so one every six games. That's pretty good, actually. 294 average. He has some speed. He's averaged like 12 steals per season, and not in a lot of games either. So he seems pretty fast. Was decent pop, about a 10-10 player, 15-15 maybe. So, I mean, I don't know how that projects to the majors, but the playing time is there, like you mentioned. Got 31 at-bats last week, so that's really good. That's a very high total for a week. And with the two homers, that probably helped drive the price up a little bit too. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, he's shortstop eligible right now, I think. And so middle infield's been a little better than corner. I think that's kind of what you and Ryan took from your position first half previews. And so maybe not a lot of teams needed Martinez because they already had multiple middle infield options. He was pretty reasonable. Also, max bid of 43. So no one really broke the bank. That's good. I missed out on Martinez where he was available last week probably. And he's available in one of my OLAC, so I could add him there if I really needed it. But I'm pretty deep at middle infield there. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how he projects rest of the year, but low K rate, so maybe the average will be there. And I the Guardians, they've had issues with shortstop because Brian Rocchio has been awful. So I could see Martinez
he's been primarily playing outfield, center, right. Well, he played all over the outfield primarily. Two more games he gets outfield eligibility. Yeah, that's why it's a very weird one for me, to be honest.
Yeah, and they have outfield options. I mean, but they have a lot of bad outfield options, I guess, too.
That is true as well.
So yeah, who knows? They have Brennan who's been all right, I think, but I don't know. Yeah, and Kwan and Brennan, and then, yeah, it makes sense to have Martinez be the last outfielder, so.
For sure. Well, we'll see where it goes, but for now, I'd say 15-team only, folks. All right, Ben, let's recap our fab moves from the week. If you're ready, I'll let you fire away with your 15-team leagues. I'll do my 15s, then we'll do your Yahoo, and we'll do my 12s, and we'll see where it goes from there.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, it should be pretty quick for me. I was pretty pretty cheap this weekend, but that was by design. So in main event one, I added Luis Garcia, the reliever. I have Carlos Estevez on this team, so I was just trying to get a little insurance for when he's traded, but Garcia could be traded too, and hasn't been that great, but I figured I might as well try to get a head start on the closer chaos. I dropped Braxton Garrett there, $1, no backup. And then this was a start of the year type play where you don't want a zero. I had a Justin Martinez, who I believe Uncle Ted had mentioned earlier.
Yes, he did.
yeah, so before I go to bed, I'll turn on MLB Network, and usually it's the Dodgers or Diamondbacks or the Giants are on because of the late games. And I've watched Martinez pitch, and he is nasty. I'm sure you've seen him too against the Giants. And he goes multi-inning sometimes and gets multiple strikeouts. He had like a 3-inning outing against the Dodgers with 5 Ks, got the win. So, and he throws like 99 with movement. He's really filthy. So I figured, hey, get him for I didn't project to have a full lineup of starters for the short period. So I was able to drop Luis Campusano for Martinez, $1, no backup. So it wasn't really a loss. Campusano isn't playing for, yeah. I mean, he was bad to begin with. And now Higashioka is producing over.
That'll be a common drop for me this week as well. We'll get to that.
Yeah. I was not concerned. I wasn't worried about dropping Campusano where I had him, which is kind of sad considering where he was picked and what kind of prospect he was at catcher. So yeah, another story for next week. So that was it in main one. Main two, only one move here. Same idea. I added Joey LoPorfido. I dropped Tyrone Taylor, $4, no backup. I had a ton of outfield ads on this list, and LoPorfido had 2 games coming up, I think, projected against 2 righties. And Taylor, I thought he did play, but his average was so bad, so the Mets started setting him, so he was expendable. But I got a couple homers out of Taylor, so that was all right. And then main three, same thing. I had Justin Martinez again here. I dropped Hayden Wesneski, $1, no backup. And then I actually had 2 free pitching spots. So I also added Kevin Ginkle. I dropped Josh Palacios, $1, no backup. Palacios I could have kept, but I had plenty of position options, excuse me. And I have a couple of guys who are injured or stashed on that team. So I wanted to try to get avoid the 0-up pitching. And then my last one's my OLAC. I added Austin Wells. I dropped Luis Campusano here, so I'm adding Austin Wells for Luis Campusano. That's all you have to know, really.
Again, similar situation, my friend.
But Austin Wells, though, so he's, with Wells, Trevino's hurt now. He hit his quad.
He's going to be out for a while, too. Grade 2 quad strain.
Yeah, and if you look at Wells, he's had at least one homer the last 3 weeks. He had 2 last week, and he's not the worst average. Decent runs in RBI, and from a catcher 2 in a main event, or if this is an OLAC, so a 15-teamer still, I don't mind that. And the Yankees hopefully get healthier and they make some trades, so I don't mind it. I was fine going $7 and no backups. A little upsetting, but oh well. Catcher's
rough. You had to get him. You had to get rid of Campusano. You had to get him. I get it.
Yeah. I don't. It's only $7. It doesn't matter really. And then here, AJ Puck was available, but I wanted to use him as more of a fill-in versus a stash. But I might just keep Puck. I dropped Ben Brown, who his neck thing. It doesn't seem to be getting better. It feels like $3, no backup. And then also, I think Uncle Ted mentioned this player, and I heard him on plenty of podcasts as well, was Jose Budo for $1, no backup. I dropped Hayden Wesneski again. He's kind of like Justin Lawrence in that Budo is getting a lot of long relief appearances for the Mets, and he's pitching well. And his name's slipping me. He's the co-host with Vlad on FTN now. Jason Anthony. Jason. Yes, he was big on Budo. He was even stashing him when he was in the minors still. So a lot of people have their eyes on Budo, and more for deep leagues, of course. But if he goes into the rotation, I rostered Budo at one point when he was in the Mets rotation. So maybe I just keep him if I can. But that was it for my 15s.
I like it. All right, for me and my OLAC, I added Lawrence Butler, dropped Michael Mercado, 44-11. Wish it was less, but Rhys Hines went for 191 in that league, so I'll take my $44 Lawrence Butler. I added MJ Melendez, dropped Tommy Pham, 6-0. Melendez dropped everywhere pretty much, but in July hitting .273, he's got 3 homers, 20% K rate. Looks like he might be getting – I'm willing to take the chance now to see if he's going to start finding that swing from before, playing much better. So Melendez was on a lot of my bid sheets this week, like even ahead of – I kind of was having him like ahead of guys like Walner and stuff. I don't know if it's great, but Melendez plays every day no matter what. So I'll take my chances there, and if he can figure it out, I'm in. And then I added Jalen Beek.
Real quick, Bob, did you see – I think he went on the IL today.
MJ Melendez? That's awesome.
Yeah, so awesome. I was big on – I hate to break the news. I had him at the top of my list too, where he was available. And then I saw that he rolled his ankle on Sunday. So then I kind of was like, well, Fab's about to run. I didn't want to risk getting a 0 for adding Melendez where I needed him. So I ended up taking him out of my bid list. But yeah,
that's sweet. So he'll be on my my bench until he returns. That's awesome. So
well, you got him.
Yep, I got him. Got him for cheap. No wonder he's so cheap. No runner-up bid. And then I added Jalen Beeks, dropped Ryan Stanek 6-2. You know, Beeks has actually been quasi decent of late. So try to get some saves where I can. In Listener League One auction, Bubba and Bloom got Lawrence Butler, dropped Davis Daniel 42-23. Got Reese Hines as well, dropped Garrett Mitchell 37-12. And then I got Austin Wells, dropped Luis Campusano 4-0. I needed a catcher, as we've already discussed, and I need a lot of hitting in this team, this league, and I have a lot of fab in that league. Listener League Two, Lawrence Butler dropped Michael Mercado 53-49. So that was a lot closer. So I'm glad I upped my bid there. Then my main event qualifier, I didn't get anybody in that league, and that's it. So, all right, what did you get in your Yahoo?
All right, and I might be selling my Yahoo team. This is my worst league, ironically enough. It's my keeper league. So last week, it's a daily league for to remind everybody. I had Zach Littell. I dropped him for Rowdy Tellez. It's a daily league, so Rowdy's been playing really well, as you know. Then I added Lars Nootbaar, dropped Andy Páez. I did have Charlie Blackman for the Colorado series. He was a streamer. I dropped him. And then I streamed Miles Mikolas for Jose Soriano. I needed a quality start, I believe, and Mikolas did not come through. He got crushed by the Cubs. Yep. But it happens.
Yes, it does. All right, OC1. I love it. Got Xander Bogaerts, dropped Davis Daniel 67-44. That made me happy. Especially after last week's Bogaerts bids, I thought I had no chance. Added Reese Hines, dropped Jordan Hicks, 27-24. Dropped Jordan Hicks. Okay, first off, I had Lawrence Butler at $28. He went for 38 in this league, so I lost there. But I got Reese Hines, dropped Jordan Hicks. For those going, what are you doing dropping Jordan Hicks, Boa? Here you go. I mentioned this on recent shows that the production's dwindling. He's not going five very often. Strikeouts are fine, but he's not getting you wins. And then he flat out said after his last start, that he's wearing down. The workload is getting to him. And with Robbie Ray, Alex Cobb coming back soon, there's going to be a lot of moving and shaking in that rotation. Now, Hicks could still be very good. There could be upside there. But for a 12-team starter, I think there's going to be streaming options that will be better than what Hicks is bringing. Because there's a lot of weeks I didn't start. I'm just thinking he might not even go five. And then at that point, what's he doing on my roster? So I moved on from Jordan Hicks. Could be wrong, but that's just the feel I have watching the team.
Real quick, he hasn't had a bad – I mean, he hasn't had a good start in a while. His best start came with a 1-6 whip over the last, like, seven. It's been rough. Yeah, so I don't blame him. I remember looking at box scores and seeing him giving up, like, three runs and not going deep into games. And, yeah, I don't blame you for that on 12-team. Yeah,
so I hope some people, like, maybe start looking into making that decision as well. And then I added Kyle Higashioka, dropped Luis Campusano, 2-0. Austin Wells was my backup in that, if anybody's curious. OC2. Reese Hines went for $100 in this league, so I did not get him. Xander Bogaerts, I got Xander Bogaerts, dropped Max Kepler, 67-58. Had plenty of outfielders, so Max was expendable and hasn't been that great for 12s. This is where it gets fun. Added Lawrence Butler, dropped Taylor Ward, 28-11. I'm a huge Taylor Ward fan, but folks, I've moved on in 12s from this train, and I hope I'm wrong. I hope he figures it out, but it's been dreadful of late, and I'll just give you his month of July if we want to just keep it simple here for Taylor Ward. In July, he's hitting $130, in June, at $181. It's been rough. So I moved on from Taylor Ward. We'll see if he could turn it around. And then I added Sean Manaea, dropped Matt Waldron 6-2. Manaea's been sneaky good this season. So I'll take my chances there. OC3, this is where it gets fun. There was six total ads in OC3 this week. I had four of them, Ben. I had four of the six ads this week.
Gotta love your OCs.
Yes. Reese Hines went for 81 in this league, and I had like no money in this league, so I was doing small bids. So I got Lawrence Butler for $15, dropped Jose Siri, runner-up was $3. Added Ranel Blanco. I know it's been up and down, but I added Ranel Blanco, dropped Jordan Hicks, $3 to no runner-up. I thought there was no chance I got Blanco for $3. I got Michael Toglia. They're going back to Coors against the Giants for the weekend. Dropped Taylor Ward, 2-0. Grabbed Kyle Higashioka. Dropped David Fry. 1-0. Fry has not been the same guy he was early on. 12-team league. I'll move on to Higashioka, who's playing every day and hitting well. See where it goes from there. But that OC3, man, I have like little funds, and I'm getting guys for cheap, so this is the beauty of it. But, yeah, we'll see where that continues to go. All right, listener questions before we head on out of here. In the chat here, Joe G., I starred you. Joji wants to know thoughts on Ben Joyce as a closer spec. He was a popular ad this week in OCs, I guess as popular as they could be. Yeah, we know Ben Joyce has the velocity, but Carlos Estevez has been good. So I guess if Estevez gets traded, Joyce is the dude. What's your thoughts on specking on Ben Joyce these days?
He's probably the smarter spec play with if you just want to go upside than the Luis Garcia that I added. So I get adding Ben Joyce. He's got the stuff. He's definitely wild. And like I mentioned, Luis Garcia could get traded as well. And then if that is the case, then I feel like Joyce would probably be the most logical replacement as the closer. But who knows? I know they moved Rodney Contreras to the bullpen. He kind of project. He actually had a three inning save on Sunday. I don't know, but he kind of projects as a closer because he only has two pitches really, maybe one in theory. But I get the Ben Joyce spec.
Yep, I'm with you as well. If you can spec, it's totally understandable. Uncle Ted wants to know, how do you feel about Yilber Diaz? He made two starts last week. Young arm for Arizona. He was a kind of popular pickup as well, Ben. Sunday start, like he limited the damage in both starts. Didn't give up much run-wise. I'll give you the numbers here. He went six innings in both starts against Atlanta and Toronto. One earned run in both starts. Two Ks and five Ks. Only two Ks versus Toronto, but it looked pretty good overall. And in AAA this year, he only made four AAA starts. The rest were in AA, but 105 Ks and 76 innings pitched.
No, he definitely took got my attention, Yilber Diaz. And so my article is called Streamer Tidbits. In last week's edition, he was actually my one of my recommended ads.
Nice.
For yeah, one of the things I remember looking at, so I pulled up the article right now. So if Diaz projects to, if he stays in the Diamondbacks lineup, he projects to face the Royals, Nationals, and Pirates out of the break.
Wow.
And the reason he wouldn't stick is because Montgomery, Erod, and Merrill Kelly come back, but I don't think they're all ready to come back that soon.
Montgomery's at least two more weeks, they said, and I think Erod and Kelly might be even farther. So yeah, you might get those three starts.
Right. And Diaz, I remember, so he had one of his two starts, like maybe only one strikeout, but the other one he had five or six. So, and I think he throws pretty hard. And I did have bids for Diaz, I think this week where he was available, but I didn't bid a lot because of the uncertainty. And he would have been a zero for the upcoming weekend. And I was trying to not get zeros if I could avoid it. But yeah, I like Diaz as a spec play, probably more so in 15s, but I don't know about 12s.
In 12s, I'll stream him, but again, it's 12s. So I won't break the bank for him. Or 15s, I could see being maybe a little more aggressive if he's going to stick because you'll utilize him a lot more in those situations. Todd Whitestone has a question for you, Ben. He says, Bubba, ask Ben, who has a lot of street cred because he continues to lead his main event league, how many home runs Rhys Hines will have by the end of July. Remind him that this is you, by the way, should consider that he's already hit five home runs in his first 22 at-bats. So by the end of July, how many home runs does Rhys Hines have, Ben?
I got to find the mute button. Todd is very funny. I appreciate Todd a lot. And so it's July 16th. We have like roughly 2 weeks left. I will say he finishes with eight. He had three more.
Uncle Ted says five, as if he doesn't hit one the rest of the way.
that's a perfectly good answer as well. I kind of wanted to say five, but I'll say three. I mean, it's eight, three more.
That's funny. That's funny. But yeah, I'd say seven or eight. I think he gets a couple more. They'll have a few games there. Ted's got the popular Aristides Aquino comp. It's more playing time for me. I think the talent's there. If, as long as he plays, he doesn't have to hit 400, obviously. I still think he can run into two or three homers, like as long as he plays. So, yeah, I think seven or eight is pretty fair when all things are said and done in July, but hey, time will tell. But time won't tell is we're going to wrap things up here, Ben. Another fun episode in the books. Thanks for squeezing this in and, you know, going to a friend's house to record this and make it happen. I appreciate that. Final thoughts before we head on out of here and get ready for a weekend of baseball. And then we're back to, you know, we're going to be week 18 Fab technically. So we have less than 10 weeks to go. Because it's like, what, 26 weeks or something like that? Like, we're getting really darn close. Another reason why I wasn't afraid to start spending a little more money on statistical needs where I need them.
For sure, yeah. And I keep track of my Fab for my four teams, and there's 10 weeks left of Fab. So, yeah, we're basically a third left, which is kind of crazy to say. I remember, like, we're just approaching the halfway mark, but that half to the third goes quickly, and the All-Star break doesn't really help that slow down at all. But yeah, to go back to being on location, anything for the pod, Bubba. I always appreciate you asking me to come on. So I'll try to help you out when I can. And it wasn't that bad. You have good friends. And so, yeah, hope it was a good show. And probably something yawning. It's a little late for me.
I thought about that. I saw you and I looked at the clock. I'm like, yeah, it's late for Ben. We got to get this thing moving here. He's got to get some sleep here.
Yeah, I got a little over an hour before I usually go to bed. But yeah, it's been a busy day of golf. And now with all this with the power out. So it's been a crazy day. But it was fun recording.
Well, I appreciate it. You go enjoy the rest of your week. I know you have some fun plans. I won't not disclose on the show because that's not anybody's business. But you go have fun with that, and maybe we'll see you next week. I haven't got that far ahead in my scheduling, but I appreciate you as always. Everyone, check out Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. His work over at SportsEthos.com. You can find me on Twitter at BDIntric. And for now, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 679. Catch you all next time.